Hello, my name is Sophie Orna. You have selected Scottish English. Medium slow. Please allow me to present the metaphor reel with DJ Sam Knott, better known to 23rd century listeners as Uncle Wayback, the founder of Wayback Enterprises, our proud custodians, and a pioneer in the field of Qualm Organics. The show was originally broadcast early in the 21st century on Spirit Plants Radio, as the saying went. Turn on, tune in, and drop by and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com. This file was sent out to see the Solid State Enigmatrix and Archives on the 31st of October 2271 by Amulet Knott. Entrance and trancing the metaphor reel.
Church bells, elf land in the twilight. Hope everybody's well and all right. Prayer of kindness is kind to us, kind of creatures who star in the sky of our own little eyes. We sing since the branches of black differentiated themselves from the greatness, and that, in doing so, became great. We sing for the great cow of space, drove across the path of God knows what. We wonder where the other giants are, looking out upon the face that takes sight far. For no face is it but surface, her face upon the depths that are our depths. That is your depths too. Deep, sweet, tweet, tweet inside you. Cool hoot upon the mist breath of the feeling field. The meadow of gorgeous God drops, tiny honey worlds dressing the grass people. The infinite tribes in a single square meter of time. The curdled fingers of the cloud like dragon's eyelashes. The laughter of little Puck. Last slither of the waning moon. Venus leading her like a dog, though she will fall behind the sun soon, overtaking her on his way to Mars. yes. And yes, for the time being, the machines may work, but only to give bone shape to the dream of what will be. Something much more appropriate to this living, loving mystery. And froth bollocks shall pronounce themselves, spoken with and spoken to. And evidently work out another way to give a little bit more than just a clue. For all I am really saying is, it's quite possible that I might love you. Time for coffee.
Bless you. Hello, Franz. I'm going to open this show with a poem written on the 8th of September 2019. This world. In the house of bone is a door to the house of leaf, where we walk along corridors to the house of rose, and springboard down to the house of water, or climb its spiral stairs to the house of the air, and there decide on the type of wind to ride, or which kind of bee to be this day, perhaps a solitary one, hiding its song in the snug house of caves. Or will we each take one feather of the blackbird and go clucking after the world worm, that train of people larvae that wait tables around every restauranting root, tickling at the budding tastes of fancy's gate. For all that slithers under your foot, and all that hovers over your head, and all that bargains in your belly, and all that trades among your bloods, and all that raves in your outer spaces, are of houses that you once called home. And call again, they will. Ancestral invitations to meaning's future gardens, where all of the houses are homed.
Dugmorthloon, approach me in sly twilight, and offer me your smelting, curvy handfoot. I'll take your greeting via umbilicking.
Button pressing.
My eyes light up. For a millisecond when we meet, my eyes light up and I can see. Dugmorthloon, you say to me, and that is where I go. Umbilicking.
Button pressing.
Frolicking in sudden awakening, running from sleep, which would seem an eternity whilst inside, but then, Dugmorthloon, and all aspects of infinity are blinks in my endless strobing gong-tinuum. Gong-tin-u-um.
Space-time are just the moment when we meet. This seems like eternity infinity, seems like this. But this is not them. This is that, which allows them to exist. One, two, exist. Tensile, ultra-dimensional, Dugmorphed. And then we'll turn away from each other and forget it ever happened until it happens again. There is no meaning. There is no game. There are only infinite eternities of waiting for nothing to happen. A game. Neither happening nor waiting are the be-all and end-all. If it was, it wouldn't be. So maybe this is some kind of game.
Game.
And all along I have been a spiral worm in the circle crown of a king. Encircling, enlightening, burrowing. Breaking the boundary between dark and light, weakness, might. Thus all my twilight days are summoned by some backwards belly hand shake.
Bravo,
I say, Dugmorphed.
Hello, welcome to Wrongador. My name is Siri, and I shall be your wizard this evening.
I'm sorry, but if we do have any unicorns in the house, yes, you, sir, you, madame, I'm going to have to request that you wear this cork ball on the end of your horns. We had a nasty incident just the other week, and this is a new regulation. Thank you very much. Most obliging.
Sorry, you there. You there. Yes, the gnome. Now look, we need gnomes on one side of the room and elves on the other, or the whole thing is just not going to work at all, okay? Okay, thank you, yes. That's it. Gnomes over there, elves over there. Thank you very much, that's marvellous. Fairies, feel free to come and go as you please, but don't make a fuss about it, okay? Thank you. Is the pooka here anywhere? Is there a pooka? No? Oh, well, that's a shame. Ah! Puck! Hello. Yes. Okay, good to see you. Yes, okay, you sit there. Falderbarrow? Yes, if you can stand up. Just here at the at the front for a moment. Thank you, that's marvellous. So everybody, this is a Falderbarrow. Okay? Good.
Brian? Yes, Brian. Would you mind awfully being our magical thin king for the evening? Okay. That's marvellous. Thank you, Brian. What's that? Well, yes, sure. I'll work it out amongst yourselves. If it's okay with her, feel free to take her as your magical thin queen or whatever, okay? Okay, great.
Oh my God, what the fuck was that? Brian, Brain, did you let out a mind slug again?
Okay, try and rein it in just a little bit. That's it, there we go.
Hold on a minute. I just got a message from Mirabelle. Apparently there's some iron or garlic in the room. Is someone going to own up and let me know who's carrying the garlic? Who's bought the iron? Come on now.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm just going to take off my hat. I'm going to turn it upside down here and leave it on the chair. And I'm going to turn around just for a moment. And when I turn back around, I'm going to count to three. And when I turn back around, I want the iron and the garlic in my hat. Okay. 3, 2, 1, 2, 3. Okay, here we have it. Now then,
we'll have no more of that, thank you.
Well then, all, if we're all sitting comfortable, please fasten your tweet belts, engage your twinkle detectors, slip into your libertarian helmets, tickle your way into this here fungo protector, revolve the very eyeball, unfathom that Monday marvel, take just a pinch of this here renegade sparkle, let us confabulate our checklists of magic mists just a minute. Okay. Please take a quick gander at these spiritual emergency flashcards. Shin pads. Has everyone remembered to bring some pocket money to chuck in the fountain of eternity? Jolly good, and snacks for the netherwood. Okay, and now fold down the eyelid blankets. Unfurl yon flower hearts. Strap on your alien love prosthetics. Submerging gently in threefold mystery. Ribcage xylophone, check. Missing tooth piano, check. Toroidal eyeball timpani, check. Tinkling transgenital triangle, check. The strings of Starchild stamina, check. Heart beat of ridiculous earth drum, check. Boiling snake rhythm of ancient gentleman, check. Farnet lather shaker of fine weather, check. Dream dictionary of the 23rd century, check. Encyclopedic navigation bone, check. Categorical imperative, check. Lonely heart mind salad, complete. Hold on to your hats and sit deep in your seats. For we're off, ladies and gentlemen, and foul dead rolls. We're off on a journey into the wildest, weirdest wervert. You ever did find yourself lost in?
Hello? Steady on. Okay.
Oh, hello, sorry. I didn't realise there was anybody there. Hello? Hello? Is there anybody there? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Well, I must say that's exceedingly odd. I thought there was no one there, and then I was sure there was someone there. And then, upon reflection, I realised there was, after all, no one there.
I'm feeling a bit shy.
Which, when I really thought about it, meant there was someone there after all. Someone.
A Tale of Two Spiders. I went into the bathroom to brush my teeth in preparation for going to bed. I looked at myself in the mirror, slightly tired. Tired from the day, and a little tired with myself. Something pricked my interest in the top left corner of the room. There was a fight between spiders. It was a smallish house spider versus a large daddy long legs. My first reaction was excitement. I was no longer tired, but enraptured by the small, monstrous battle taking place in my bathroom. Home is where the action is, after all. The daddy long legs had grabbed the house spider and was trying to wrap him, but the house spider was resisting. The house spider was smaller but chunkier, and when he jabbed himself sharply towards the daddy long legs, Big Daddy would back off a bit. But the first threads were already upon him, and Big Daddy's reach was just too great an advantage. I watched as he managed to spin thread after invisible thread around the poor house spider, until it looked like all his legs must be tied, for he jabbed out no more, just sat there in the middle of his eight bent legs, waiting for death, I guess. I became a little angry. I jabbed my finger at the daddy long legs. He backed off, and the house spider fell a small distance, but soon was being reeled back in. I voiced my disgust. "You sick daddy long legs, fuck! How can you go after one of your own?" I jabbed my finger at him again, and this time the house spider fell to the floor. I inspected him. It seemed he was dead. He was completely motionless. I wondered if he'd just given up. I felt like perhaps he knew he was beat and somehow had just switched his life off. I don't know if spiders can have heart attacks. I was pissed at Daddy Longlegs now. I know him quite well, little lord of the top left corner when facing the mirror. We had even had friendly exchanges. Well, I had looked upon him fairly fondly and with interest, and sometimes enjoyed annoying him a little, making him do the mad web-shaking dance they seem to do when gently disturbed. Thus, I was upset to now be seeing this side of his character. I told him so, and to be honest, I flicked him a couple of times, roughly at the level of what I hoped would be a good spider smack. Unfortunately, this only served to amplify my rage. With cold iration, I decided to evict him from the house. I opened the back door in preparation and came to pluck him off the wall. I did so by grabbing hold of a leg and was surprised when it came away from his body and he dropped to the ground to escape me. I supposed his losing a leg was justice enough. Plus, I couldn't see where he fell. So I forgot about him then, after briefly pondering the image of the seven-legged spider. A sign of good luck for some. I wondered if perhaps he would move elsewhere now and work on his repentance. I put my attention back on the house spider. I wasn't convinced he was dead, although he was motionless. I picked him up and put him on the sideboard and fetched a toothpick and a pair of tweezers. I took off my glasses in order to be able to focus better up close. I am short-sighted and believe people with eyes like mine are better at seeing tiny things. At this point in my life, the range of my clear vision extends precisely to the end of my outstretched arm. A book held at arm's length just begins to blur. Thus I exist in a bubble of perfect clarity that is proportionally related to my body. I don't know if this range has shrunk or changed over the years, because it's only really recently that I have become attentive to such things in any systematic way. At any rate, this is not the first time I have attempted a kind of microsurgery on insect kind. I once helped a small cricket-like creature whose long antennae had stuck to her body after passing the night in the dregs of a mushroom tea. It was very satisfying. This time I was less certain that there was any hope for my patient. I saw no response as I tried to tease the tweezers between his legs and grab hold of threads that I couldn't even see. After keeping at this a while, I managed to gently free one, then another, of his legs. They seemed long, hairy, hollow, slightly wet, and weak, if not lifeless. Even if he was dead, I resolved to carry on until I had freed him, as much as a sort of meditation as anything, although I couldn't imagine not finishing what I had started. I managed to find a couple of pieces of web that were more visible, having a little dust attached, and it was as I was pulling at the second of these that the house spider sprung back into action. I must have removed all the threads from around his knees, but not from around his feet, for he sprung up, straightening his legs, but his feet were still tied, so he fell back. I was pleased he was alive at any rate, although, naturally, a little more jumpy now. He held still while I got the last of his bindings off, and just as soon as I had done so, he sprang up and ran a few inches away from me. I was pleased to see him freed. I suppose I have some fondness for house spiders, and upon reflection, realise I find them more personable than Daddy Longlegs. It is probably simply because they seem more often to require my assistance. For instance, getting out of the bath. And so we have had ample opportunity to bond. They also creep me out more than the Daddy Longlegs. After all, they are chunkier and hairier and more of a classic tarantula type. Thus, as well as my having helped them, they have helped me to encounter and stay with, and to some extent overcome, some of my instinctual prejudices against their kind. I sometimes wonder if this is not good practice for my one day shaking hands with something entirely alien. Or if it won't help me to relax one day, maybe even in another world or life, when something terrible, strange, and yet kind, comes to assist me in some muddle I have gotten myself into. I also think of Loki, someone who it is never easy to have around, and yet I wouldn't be without. His name might have something to do with knots and loops. One of his gifts to us was the fishing net. In the guise of a grey mare, he was the mother of Sleipnir, Odin's eight-legged horse, the fastest and finest horse there ever was. Some people think that Loki himself used to be a spider. Maybe he still is, sometimes. The next morning I came down, stood in front of the sink, and looked up at the top left-hand corner, wondering if I would see a sheepish or repentant seven-legged spider up there. But no, his place was occupied by a slightly smaller fellow with all his legs. I felt no animosity towards this new lord, and was pleased to note that my unfortunate encounter the previous night had not led me to tar all Daddy Longlegs with the same brush. Although I would most likely still support a house spider in a fight if push came to shove.
Go in your bed, in your bed, in your bed. You're annoying me.
I'm trying to record an owl.
Listening to The Metaphor Reel with Sam Knott on Spirit Plants Radio.
Old creaky skeleton wriggling in his bed. Put a worm around your bones and go outside instead. And wriggle down into the earth and see how that feels nice. And when the worm is off your bones, go and take a slice off the earth. It's nice. Yeah, it's nice. Go and take a slice and take it to the giant toaster man and put it in its. And then when it is burnt like toast, your skeleton bones eat up a beard of dust. And when you finish saying the weird as you must, eat up a beard of dust. Eat up a beard of dust. Eat a baby and live down.
He found the first shroom of the season while picking up shit. A hoof had somehow uprooted it, but it was not damaged. Perfect little specimen, although its bell was rather broad. He turned it over in his hand, pondered putting it back on the ground, but thought it better to say a proper hello, and so popped it in his mouth, the little elvish fellow. He long has had some doubts about this path he can't quite follow, and recently even more so. Ever since another dead hippie rebirthday, really. 100 wizened elves have waited under the ram's horn for him to return. Occasionally, he will approach them, unfold their paper packaging, blow the tiny insects off, count them, chat a little, and contemplate their eating. He was sure it would happen last time. He spent all day preparing, but when night came, he was too tired from all the tidying. He smoked some ganja instead, and then realized he couldn't sleep anyway. He sat up in bed and sang until his voice cracked. Some of the songs still make him laugh. He knows that most of the tension around them is his, but what does that matter? It is still there. He knows the world they guard the door of is real. He knows the sense of humour they have is not to be laughed at. It scoffs at human power, because it is one with all the ways we are more than that. He knows that he works with and for that world. He knows that world is also this one, but not. The logical form of the metaphor realm is not. This is his double negative entheology. Love is not God, he insists, and thus gravity is not love, and so on. A logic of infinite conjunction in continual transformation, intense and ridiculous. Absurd. He makes too big a deal of it, but then life is rather a big deal, no? And so I is a big deal too. Soul transaction. Trans is as close as we get to the truth in the flesh. He knows there is no disembodied truth too. But imagination dies when literalized. If you can imagine it, it can be real, they say, imagining they are being empowering. He knows that real imagination can never be made real. It is too true. Real imagination is impossible. Only through the impossible can he realize his potential in the invisible. Some become transhumanist, some simulate theory in practice, but all this is meaningless without an awareness of how impossible the real is. He knows there is no real line between nature and culture, but by the time we can call ourselves civilized, something has been superimposed. It is an imposition, your simulation. Who was he talking to then? No lion-headed pride, no duplicitous snake tail, or fake cock crow of awakening, crow of sleep. He dreams the machine has a human face, unlike his God. So without image, he understands it is not even without image. Odd. Shut up, Mr. Knot, you rabid flunky of wizarded frustrations. Speak about your feelings as if you want to be human. He understood that he was. It is just complicated, is all. Or complex, more hopefully. He believes that memory itself is doubt. And those who believe they don't believe, only believe so. He lives in light of how it sometimes seems. This is belief for him. A choice. An orientation. Toward the natural good. Which we could figure as much a kind of darkness as light. The cosmic eyes of chaos upon us. He believes it is true that Plato's ooze, the form of philosophical potatoes, is one. The one is good, and this goodness is, for all intents and purposes, the real, which is impossible. He knows he is, at least in part, that part which is the whole, real. You are 2, 3, 4, alive, 6, and so on. The metaphorial, the form of the good, is the one movement of mind, which is soul. That is to say, the form of the different and the form of the same are one. They are the same, which is to say, different. Mind differences relates. Simples, eh? Boring, even. He insists there is nothing boring about it in practice. There is a peace in it which will not let us rest. The name of this peace is life including death, such concepts as have no real opposites. He knows that to contemplate the spectre of the actual possibility of life having an opposite is a kind of necessary evil, the shadow of the impossible. He believes that once we have done this, we become impossibly grounded in the integrated double negative of openness. He realizes this is a strange way to talk about friendship. He likes to imagine that is the name of a spaceship, perhaps an inner spaceship, concurrently docked every here at the place he calls Port Leverett. It is fun to let myths form, he thinks. A kind of saving grace in all this over-imaginative weirdness. A way that it becomes more constructive, digestible, like the mushroom. More than just a trip. He knows it as a person. No less a psychedelic experience than any tuned-in conversation. Even just this one, even more so for being able to be concentrated on. He lets the stages of the flavour sink in through the atmospheric metals of rain smell into the space of not meat. Unto the sweet nostalgia of almost vanilla, disappearing like a song become a whisper. He feels happy for himself to know this wild soul food, and all who do. He feels sad about those tasteless pills, considers rhyming dark satanic mills, and chuckles at his endless drama. He remembers his old drug dealer, a friend who committed suicide. Remembers the times he just needed his fix and the awkwardness of treating a lonely, troubled person like a medicine dispenser. He wonders if he said the bit about the beast, how there is nothing evil in the animal, that the death machine wears a human face. He remembers the clouds of smoke in that house, like incense. How sometimes he could see the dead in them. He knows the essentially eternal life of the universal organism, how difficult it is to bear, to comprehend, such astonishing lengths of time and penetrating loneliness. Our little deaths are helping it come to terms with its own not dying, in which time has only those meanings that we give it, and space that meaning that we can't. He knows the fear that prophesizes entropy as absolute truth, perverted desires for perpetual motion, uniform distribution averted like eyes fixated on efficiency. He knows the best ideas are uncomplicated, but Occam's razor is an aesthetic, and Ogham's eraser shows it an anesthetic. Scalpel that dulls the heart of his unholy pain, beauty vacuumed into the eye of the beholder, stolen from the corpse flower in the process. The sublime buzz of what sometimes gets confused with mere prettiness. But no one owns the soil in which grows the arbitrary tree. He does not own it. It is not owned by science, religion, or poetry. Any way can be the wrong one. Any right might be the right. Is it the thought that counts? Or the fingers? Or the gaps between the thoughts and the fingers? He has tripped over his own tongue more than once. But these words are as calculated as the appearance of that single mushroom spoke into his mouth. And turning round and round in the doubt beyond doubt, the immemorial now that shows us how to trip on anything. And what a fierce and fructifying prospect this ain't.
Special poems by Spagborg. Complete lazalacious practilicidine, with no aim, perfection, a song, until the warm nights of the wrong time was right to bing bang bong, and recall the feathered man in the tree with eyes like two little yellow moons, and how he shuffled from side to side in the blue dream light, and how the treetop tingled in the falling breeze, went all quietly nonchalant unwrapped. And it was literal most hours I shuffled, feet shuffled, at the little feathered fellow. Was profound as macadamia caravan. That was a whole nut of cracked sound. It wasn't really necessary to say any more than slow down. For unfold begin to happen with more slowitude, and his fandledy branch began to glow with slow, till all was covered by the conscience, and Terry Bold put his old boots on and tried to give his money away again. The most important thing, he always said, was to pay attention while it happens. For then, what has been forgotten is nothing but what was not, and none but the present remembered. The code Magus wrote inside the bark of the old oak, where the designer rattled new spells in larval beetle armour. Tiny unicorn farmer knew no soap but drama, and with a croak of laughter accelerated dafter. Infunzant Brent of taken brunt, he fireworked cathedral, and when the wheel unspiraled summages through yellow pages, Wurzel Gummidge's thumbages, searching for the phone number of the old crow-folded woman of sleek inside eyes, and finds nothing rest less than her jewel-rim look through the papery thin world screen between 344 and 45. Secret messages from every second even removed the Eden and slipped it inside the barcode. Forevermore the creature patrolled the beep, fractalized jingle of commerce, until long since then the dream was over and the trolley returned to its rightful resting place, and the small metal puddle disinfected, and the whole sparrow flight absorbed into breadcrumbs, and the entire deep fat fried rough and tumble rustled itself into the snipped out newspaper to frelleth the wove of Bedephany, to frelleth the wove of Bedephany, to frelleth the wove of Bedephany. Turn all your clothes inside out and take the door to the left of me, to the great wild moor of the lesser's moor, and wander there a while and write down everything you think and bring back some natural object as a momentum, and remember to check in on it morning, noon and night, and let it remind you of the task you are to practice. You are to practice. You are to practice. The sparkled eye yellow moon shuffle of the blue wing. Spinarai terotin. A trifle of undictionized hypnogog. Bisorg. Bisorg.
You will soon be exiting the metaphor reel. May all of us here at Wayback Enterprises, in association with Spirit Plants Radio, wish you a bon continuation. Until next time, it has been ape leisure. Thanks for listening. Kiss, kiss, kiss.
Phalanx, no phalanx.
Dilladapitate, dilladapitate. Umbrella arse,
umbrella arse.
Slither zord,
zord.
Pondrous twelkma. Dryad in ten,
ten, ten, ten.
Crystal eye brunt,
crystal eye brunt.
Struck by emerald lightning,
lightning, lightning, lightning, lightning, lightning.
Thy hooven mobile den, torn with knuckle crunks, unto phalanx furtive. Merkile spore time,
time,
time. If Fibbly Berfinkelborte were never dog your cornac gnaw, all which wise the world was round. Somewhat confused, chaotic looking hut in a clearing in the forest, framed by trees from a little distance. As we approach, we note a dilapidated shack going back to the earth beside a mossy boulder. There is a bluish sword stuck in the boulder, like a metal crucifix with its crossguard shining, with a snake curling up around it, sort of winking lasciviously at us, and a small, furry, spiky, hedgehog-type creature sort of peeking round the boulder. We note many herbs laid out to dry all along the front of the hut as we approach the door. As we enter, we are struck by a clutter of hanging things, being suddenly confused by the darkness inside, combined with the fact that a prism is among the things dangling from the ceiling, and it is shooting out a rainbow, semi-blinding us. We see what seems to be a tiny, skeletal, shroom dragon woman made from bones and light. Or is it just old knotty bits of weathered wood, or bundles of herbs? Now, as our eyes adjust, we see the fluffy old white wizard laying in bed at the back of the hut. Lying on his back, with his arms folded across his chest and his legs crossed at the ankles. His eyes are open and he seems to be staring, with a slight smile maybe, up at the ceiling. Guess
we've been hearing his thoughts.
Guess
we've been hearing his thoughts.
Guess
you've been